Can you reset difficult blood sugars? The answer is yes. It's shockingly simple. The answer actually came to me when I almost drowned last week in a swimming pool, which, as someone living with type 1 diabetes, is a complicated situation to be in as well. But what's more important for today that I want to share with you is that I had a client recently who changed one easy thing in her life, and as a result, fixed her blood sugars almost entirely. I mean, how cool would that be if you could just change one thing that takes 5 seconds and then blood sugars are smooth as butter? In fact, I wanted to show this to you because I got a unicorn right now. These are my current blood sugars. It is reading 100 and has been there for like 2 hours. And a little spike there earlier went to like 156 or something from breakfast. But we're cruising at 100. It's nice and steady. And if I could show you how to do that with just a couple of easy, simple shifts, would that make worth this episode sticking around? So hopefully you're gonna find this one valuable. I've got a couple of tips for you that I wanna share. In fact, I've got 5 in my notes that I believe will help you to make dramatic improvements in your blood sugars without requiring dramatic efforts. If you don't know who I am, my name is Matt Vandevecht. I'm a certified master fitness trainer and nutritionist. And today, I'm gonna help you simplify your blood sugars. Let's get into it.
I've spent the last 10 years pushing the limits while identifying trends and patterns in my type 1 diabetes management. Follow along as I learn, apply, and share the fitness, nutrition, and lifestyle strategies that I've learned from diabetes experts around the world. The real question is, how can we live fearlessly with diabetes while maintaining stable blood sugars? This podcast is here to give you the answer. My name is Matt Vandevecht, head coach and co-founder of FTF Warrior, and welcome to Part of My Pancreas.
First things first, I got to talk to you about this thing where I almost drowned, because that was a wild story. Right now, I'm training for a half Ironman. And if you don't know what that is, the race is 70.3 miles long of swimming, biking, and running. It's insanity. That's besides the point, though. I want to prove you can do it with type 1 diabetes. And in a recent swim, I did a mile and a half in the pool before going to do my second workout, because that's what's required of me at this point. But during the swim, I don't know, 70, 80 laps in or something, I started getting these voices in my head. Not the ones you're thinking of. Excuses, justifications, reasons I should just call it a day because I've worked hard enough, right? And what's difficult that I've noticed is that the more I train, the more often I hear these voices. You know, what if you have a low blood sugar? You should go check on your numbers. What if you drown? You're tired. You've worked hard enough. And it's all these little voices in my head that tell me, just go. It's fine. You've worked hard enough. You've been here long enough. Give up, you know. And it's this little voice I call the inner weakness. We've got the inner weakness and the inner warrior. And that's it's a different topic entirely. But the point is, I'm hearing these voices like, maybe that's why your toes are tingling because you're going low, right? Maybe that's why you're feeling shaky, not because you're fatigued from swimming, but because of a low blood sugar. And there's some anxiety that kind of creeps in after a while because when you're swimming, I don't have access to blood sugars. I can't see anything that's happening, right? Now, my vision actually did get a little bit blurry. And I was like, that's weird. Is it a low blood sugar? It's always my second thought. But then I started remembering some of my research recently, and one of the things I came across was SIPE, or swim-induced pulmonary embolism, which ultimately means you take in water while swimming, and it can lead into a pulmonary embolism, and you have forced breathlessness, and you die. And so my brain's going that direction now, like, what if you die? You know, and it's like, you're fine. But it triggered a thought that maybe I'm forgetting some basics. As a swimmer, I know how to breathe, but I've focused on these advanced tactics, how many strokes per minute, how to pull the correct way, and how to glide, how to breathe on both sides, and all this stuff. And I forgot that one of the main first things you learn in swimming is to fully exhale while your face is in the water, so that when you come up for a breath, you can inhale and don't have to worry about rushing it, which I used to do, which was, you know, quick exhale, quick inhale. And part of the reason a lot of people naturally want to hold their breath while swimming is that you're fearful, right? You're fearful of getting rid of all of your oxygen with your face in the water. It doesn't feel natural. You want to wait until your head's above the water to breathe out so then you can breathe in. And what can happen when we forget this very basic principle, is you end up with this buildup of CO2 in your lungs. So if you're only exhaling half of your lungs, let's say, and then quick trying to get more air in, well, half of the air that you've left in your lungs, it builds up, and that's carbon dioxide. And without getting into the science behind it, it leads to decrease in performance. It can lead to some issues later on, breathlessness, you might pass out. And I remembered that very basic principle. Oh yeah, breathe all the way out underwater so I can breathe all the way in above water. And after doing that for a few laps, the blurry vision went away. My power came back. I wasn't shaky or tired, and I finished my 100 laps or whatever it was. And it was shocking to me that that simple fix had such a profound impact when I had been spending all of my time researching the advanced stuff. And people who come to me with type 1 diabetes, oftentimes we focus on advanced stuff. And there can be circumstances where the basics actually get us further than the advanced topics ever would, right? And this example that I shared with you in the beginning of this episode did exactly that. See, I had a client a number of months ago, might even be years at this point, who we had been going through all these advanced strategies for blood sugars, right? Of course, I'm known for the blood sugar formulas, ways to predict stable blood sugars through any activity or meal or lifestyle, like making diabetes work so that you can live your best life. And so we're getting all this stuff set up, and just there's one section of her day in the morning where she would consistently see spikes, and we're like, what the heck is going on, right? This is a difficult one, but let's keep looking deeper into it. Long story short, she was like, oh yeah, I don't drink water until lunch. And we were like, water's super important. You need water to live, but it's also really helpful for blood sugar regulation. And we discovered that every morning when she woke up, she was severely dehydrated. And through a single 8-ounce glass of water, sometimes two, she was able to completely wipe out the spike that she was encountering. Blood sugars fixed. All she had to do was drink a cup of water. Are you kidding me? Basic stuff. And I was so excited for her because that's the easiest fix. And we love easy fixes, right? And overall, the one thing she had to change in this case was drinking more water. And of course, I've got my water here. I drink it all day long. It's a habit that I've had to force into my life because I also wasn't drinking a ton of water. But I wanted to share with you, in addition to that first tip, which is hydration, five total tips that have changed a lot of my clients' lives and have come to be known as the five core principles for basic diabetes management that I found to be most helpful in my life, but also in that of my clients. So let's dive in real quick. First one being hydration. This is the easiest one to start. A lot of people find a hard time sticking to it though. So I wanted to walk through a couple different strategies, surface level, to keep it consistent in your life. Now, number one, as silly as this sounds, drink out of a straw. Drinking out of a straw. For some reason, I honestly don't know why, we're more likely to drink more volume when we drink through a straw. We keep going back for more. And they've done research on this. It's actually been proven. So drink through a straw. Another one is to build it into your routine or into your habits. Obviously me, I have it within arm's reach at all times. This is 40 ounces of water. I do this a couple times a day. It stays at my desk and I just sip on it throughout the day. It makes it really easy. You can also add water to your meals, add water to your snacks or to your walks. Like, find a way to anchor water to your habits, to your routines. Lastly, if you're having a really hard time with water itself, if you hate water, you can add some flavor. You can make it fun. Full disclosure, this water has electrolytes in it. It tastes salty and a little bit of sweet. I like that. So it helps me to drink more. Now, as to how much you should drink per day, it's going to differ a little bit depending on your personal needs, on a lot of your internal health organs, especially kidneys, right? But also on your activity level and how often you sweat. I'm very active, training for this half Ironman, so I have to drink a lot of water. I also add electrolytes to my water. So look into that. I drink over a gallon per day. That's not normal, I would say. Most people, it's like a half to two-thirds a gallon per day, but if you don't want to measure in gallons, you can measure in cups. You can stick right around 13 to 15, depending on male or female. So that's a quick overview of water. But let's talk a little bit about why water is helpful for us diabetics, right? Number one is it's going to help bring down blood sugars, not by itself. You still need insulin if you're insulin dependent like me, but if you dilute your blood, by default, you're lowering your blood glucose numbers. So if you increase the volume with water that is being added, then per unit of blood, let's say, and unit, we're not using a specific measurement, but you are decreasing the total sugar per unit of blood because there is more water per unit as well. So you're diluting your blood. But in a more serious note, with the direct impact water can have on blood sugars, it helps insulin that has been given. So if I take a bolus of insulin or a shot of insulin, it'll help that insulin to circulate, to get around your system a bit better. And I'll give you an example that I tell my clients. If you imagine two rivers that you're kayaking down, okay, we're going to use some metaphors here. River number one, it's water, okay, as you would expect a river to be. River number two is pancake syrup, which we're making this up to make it make sense. Now, both rivers, you're going to try and kayak down, but the kayak is insulin, and the river is your bloodstream. Which river do you think the kayak is going to be able to get down faster? Well, the one with water, right? And the water is what happens when your body is hydrated. It's easier for that kayak or that insulin to make its way through and get through your bloodstream, do its work. The pancake syrup is what it's like when your blood sugar is high and if you're dehydrated, right? It's a lot more difficult for the kayak to get through. It still will, but it's going to take way longer. So to make it easier for blood sugars, just drink a lot more water and you'll notice this is going to help. Now, kidney health, this also comes into play. Organ health overall. If you have high blood sugars, your body wants to flush out those sugars. And if you don't flush it out with extra water, your body actually recycles the existing fluids to your kidneys, kidneys filtration system for your body. Now, it's difficult for your kidneys to function in a dehydrated state. And so best thing you can do for your kidneys, your blood sugars, overall health, add more water. Just like the easy pancake mixes that I use at home. Just add water. The last note that I'll add here on water before we get into step number two is that drinking more water and being in a hydrated state can actually help with CGM accuracy. So I've got a CGM right here. I've got another one actually on my stomach. I'm wearing two CGMs right now just for an experiment that I'm doing. But if you drink more water, it helps the CGMs to read more accurately, which for me and for many people living with diabetes, can be a pretty important thing if you're dosing insulin based off of those numbers. So water, amazing. Now, tip number two, accurate carb counting. This is a tough one. I know a lot of people want to guess about it, but just trust me on this. The more precise you are in your carb counting, the more confident you can be in the insulin that you're delivering for those carbs, right? An example, if I have a 1 to 10 insulin to carb ratio, which means for every 10 carbs, I take one unit of insulin, and I'm guessing that this meal has 50 carbs, but if I were to measure it, turns out it would only have 40 carbs. Well, that's 10 carbs off, which means I have given an extra unit of insulin because my guess was not perfectly dialed in, right? So that extra unit of insulin could push me into a low blood sugar because I decided not to count my carbs. Alternatively, this one happens more often from a lot of stories that I hear, you guess the opposite end of the spectrum. It has 50, but you guess 40, right? Well, now you're missing a unit of insulin and you end up going over 200. Now, the issue here is not that we don't know the carbs, because oftentimes there are ways to find good carb counts. At the very least, you can Google it, okay? If you have a plate of rice in front of you and you have a measuring cup, you go, oh, scoop, that's one cup of rice. And you ask Google, how many carbs are in a cup of rice? And it'll tell you probably 45, right? Alternatively, and actually more desirably, if you have a food scale, if you get the exact weight, you can have the exact carb count. So that's preferred. Food scale is the best. Measuring cups are second best. Using the hand measurement system is third best. I hesitate to even list it as a best because it's not a best option. But measure your carbs, count them appropriately using a food scale, a measuring cup, or an app. There's plenty of apps out there. MyFitnessPal is one that I use. A lot of my clients also like to use Lose It, Chronometer, Weight Watchers. There's a number of them out there. Calorie King. That's when I got a Calorie King book when I was first diagnosed, and you'd flip through the book to find the restaurant that you were at. But use something, at the very least, use Google, and then use your mind to, you know, add some context to it. I've had some situations where I looked up something like a burrito. Actually, great example. I looked up a bean and cheese burrito on one of these apps, and it said it had zero carbs. And I said, that's not possible, because there's carbs in the tortilla, in the beans, in the rice. And so use your common sense as well. But that is something that is critical. And it really is a simple fix. You don't have to worry about becoming a doctor to learn how to count carbs. It's as simple as using Google. And if you are a little bit more advanced, you can play with the nutritional labels. Highly recommend getting familiar with that if you live with type 1 diabetes, because it gives you the accurate carb count. As a beneficial side note that I think will be helpful for a lot of people to know, nutritional labels are actually allowed to be up to 20% off as per the FDA, unfortunately. So if a food is listed as 100 carbs, it actually might only have 80 carbs, and you could be off that much and still be legal to have it listed that way. There's a lot of misinformation around marketing, with packaging, with nutritional labels, with serving sizes, a lot of things that are done with ill intent. The companies are just trying to sell their foods. They'll market as diabetic friendly, keto friendly. I could rant on this topic for hours. If you'd like me to do that and walk through the ins and outs of how to properly carb count with nutritional labels, let me know in the comments. This is something that it's a bit of a passionate topic for me, because I've been caught off guard a few times by counts that have been inaccurate and have driven me mad, thinking that I messed up when the reality was it was the label. But this is also why I weigh my food and I use measuring cups. I hold responsibility myself in those cases instead of relying on a nutritional label. So let me know in the comments if you think that would be a helpful topic to cover. Next up, and I would argue this is almost as important as carb counting, is the pre-bolus. If you don't know what the pre-bolus is, it is a strategy to take insulin a little bit early before you start to eat your food, because for most of us, insulin takes a little bit longer to act on our system than the carbohydrates going into our mouth. So oftentimes, the best rule of thumb, if there were one, is to wait 10 or 15 minutes after giving insulin to take your first bite. Now, I say generic rule of thumb, and I want that to be very clear, because our strategies with diabetes, especially if you're insulin dependent, must be dynamic. You cannot use a single rule and apply it to everything, because every day is different with blood sugars, as I'm sure you've probably began to experience at this point. So if every day is different, we can't use the same wait 10 minutes no matter what. Because, and I'll give you one example, of which there are probably 10, what happens if your blood sugars are currently low and you're currently going lower? Do you still want to give insulin more time to work and potentially push you into an even lower blood sugar with new insulin on board? Probably not, right? That's a scary thing to deal with. So we have to recognize that our strategies must change as the situations themselves change, okay? That being said, pre-bolus, if you're not doing it, this alone has helped hundreds of my personal clients fix their post-meal blood sugar spikes. So pre-bolusing, something to consider in a generic interface like this, where I'm not talking one-on-one with you. I'm obviously making content for the internet. I cannot tell you how long you should wait, or should you wait, or what is the number. That's something I work with my clients on directly to get an exact number. For me, it's 20 minutes on the dot. I have some clients where it's 5 minutes, some clients where it's 45 minutes. It will be different for you. It's going to be different based on the situation, the type of food, your activity that day, your insulin needs. A lot of things come into play, but getting more dialed in on how long you should wait is super helpful. However, The first step is just implementing, right? If you don't know how long you should pre-bolus, what I've done in the past when I was first starting out is instead of 0 minutes where I took my insulin at the same time as my first bite, I waited a couple minutes and see how that worked. If I spiked after the meal still, okay, more than a couple minutes is probably needed. Maybe I'll go for 10 minutes, like my doctor said. Okay, cool. So I went for 10 minutes, like my doctor said, still spiked, right? Maybe I'll try 15. Do that for a couple of days. I was still spiking. So I added another 20 minutes, right? And eventually got to a place where I was like, all right, my rule of thumb in general is 20 minutes. And then of course now I do use what we call the pre-bolus formula. So things are different every day. So my pre-bolus must also be different. This morning, my pre-bolus was 15 minutes. Had I done 20, I would have gone low. Yesterday, my pre-bolus, is gonna be wild, was an hour and a half. Now that was very, very unique circumstances. I was missing insulin, it was a whole thing. But in the beginning, your first step is just to be aware of these things and consider pre-bolusing. Maybe talk to your doctor about it, especially if you're not a client of mine. If you are a client of mine, let's get your pre-bolus dialed in so we know the exact minute for you, okay? So pre-bolus, if you don't know what that is, now you do. It's important to consider. Now, one of the big things that impacts the pre-bolus, but is also our next and fourth tip for today, is exercise. Now, most of us have been told, you should exercise, right? And it's like, yeah, it's one of the best things you can do in life for your health, also for your mood, for a number of things. Obviously, it's super beneficial for our overall health, but it's also really helpful for our blood sugar management. Now, one of the reasons for that is that consistent exercise will also increase your insulin sensitivity, which means you are lowering your insulin needs throughout the day. Now, I said consistent exercise. If you exercise once a week, you're going to notice that your blood sugar levels are a little bit more volatile, a little bit more up and down, because near the exercise, let's say you work out on Monday and Tuesday, you might need less insulin and see the benefit of that, but it doesn't last forever, right? It's got a timer on it, a ticking time bomb. Well, it's a good thing, so it's not a time bomb, a ticking celebration. I don't know. You get the point. So when you exercise, it's good for your blood sugars for typically a day or two or sometimes three, depending on the type of exercise. Now, increased insulin sensitivity has a number of benefits as well for the rest of your body. But for my purposes, I like knowing that my insulin is more efficient. I might see a reduction in my pre-bolus time, which means instead of having to wait 20 minutes, I might only have to wait 15. That's cool because I don't like waiting to eat my food. But of course, in general, you're also burning glucose while you exercise, stimulating muscle tissue. You're going to improve your metabolism, your body composition, physique, all these things, weight loss come into play as well. But exercise as a kind of a rule of thumb, beneficial. But you got to be careful in how you do it. If you haven't exercised in a while, make sure that you're modifying the exercises to what your abilities allow. Right? Don't jump straight into training for the Olympics if you haven't gotten off the couch in a few years. So even going for a simple walk can be incredible for your blood sugars. In fact, I actually use walks on a pretty consistent basis. Even though I'm already training for a half Ironman, you'd think that's enough exercise, right? Like yesterday, I biked 56.8 miles and then I went for a 5.2 mile run. And you're like, what the actual heck? How the heck is that not enough? He still goes for walks? I do, but here's the reason why. That exercise, huge boost in insulin sensitivity. I'm also training for a very specific event, so I'm pushing myself to the limits. I'm having difficulty feeling my legs today. But walking can actually speed up insulin that we've given. And that's my favorite way to use it, is that activity can help recent boluses or injections of insulin to work more efficiently and more effectively. So if we are able to use that to our advantage, if I have a high blood sugar after a meal, I might go for a 10-minute walk and it comes back down. Beautiful way to get the benefit of exercise for the rest of my body, but also to help my blood sugars out. Now, Caveat is if you are not at a high blood sugar, that exercise also could lead into a low blood sugar. And I want you to be careful about that. Okay, exercise is good, but when combined with the wrong variables, it can put us in a pretty scary situation with our blood sugars specifically. Exercise is still healthy, but we do have to consider a few different pieces of the puzzle when we're living with type 1 diabetes. Now, the last step I want to give you, this is more specific to what I teach my clients, but it's something we call retroactive analysis. Now, at its core, this is assessing your data, looking at your blood sugars and saying, what's going on here? Right? Looking at it and saying, what did I do wrong? What did I do right? How can I avoid the mistakes that I made previously? How can I repeat the successes that I made? And most importantly, how can I interpret this data to learn from, so that I can make improvements overall? So when you get to the end of your day, or if you have a situation that was less than desirable, I want you to ask yourself, what happened? Just a very curious question. Not like, what happened? Right? No, what happened here? Be kind to yourself, all right? We want to know and approach diabetes with curiosity, as we are, in most cases, a living experiment. Right, we have to experiment on ourselves if we want to understand how these things impact our blood sugars. This is what I did for many years. In fact, I still run experiments. This whole half Ironman thing is also an experiment. I've never, ever done or even considered doing any kind of endurance athletics. In fact, I hated it for a long time. But I decided this is something that I was ignorant to. I had no idea how it impacted me. And until we encounter these things and learn from them, we remain ignorant. In some cases, blissfully ignorant, albeit. But it's important to consider the ignorance tax that we also face, which means if I am not aware of how this will impact my blood sugars, and one day I encounter it, I will pay the ignorance tax until I learn the lesson that life has to offer, right? Which means if I'm unaware that a recent insulin injection plus exercise could lead into a dropping blood sugar, and I encounter that with a blood sugar that's already on the lower side, the ignorance tax in that case would be a low blood sugar, right? So it's important that we do continue this level of curiosity with our diabetes and continue asking ourselves, What happened there, right? And being kind to ourselves in the process, but as much as possible to learn from our mistakes, but also from our successes, to analyze the data that we're given with our blood sugars, because our blood sugars are quite literally giving us a breadcrumb trail to find solutions. It's just up to us to get curious and start opening up these reports and going, what's going on with the blood sugars? And then to interpret accurately. That's for a different episode entirely, but something I've worked on with my clients as well is that mislabeling these blood sugars can also lead into some pretty detrimental experiences. If we think that, I'll give you an example from one of my clients actually. She thought that eating a certain type of food lowered her blood sugars. She said, every time I eat this food, my blood sugars drop. So that food lowers my blood sugars, right? And unfortunately, she thought that for a long time before working with us. Fortunately, I was able to cut this pattern because we recognized it wasn't the food, it was that food was always consumed when she went for a walk with her dogs. And so she had wrongly assumed that the food lowered her blood sugars, when in reality, it was the walk that had lowered her blood sugars. But that is the ignorance tax that you pay. She did not know that exercise would lower blood sugars. She thought the food was the thing because she was told that food is the only variable to consider. So we must surround ourselves with other people who are also learning, sharing experiences in communities and environments that allow us to level up our diabetes management, to allow us to learn newer things, greater things as well. So I hope this one was helpful for you. As a bonus for making it to the end, I want to give you a tip number 6, and that is that blood sugars will behave better with these 5 tips. In fact, exercise has been known to add years to our lives by itself. If that's the only thing you did, then studies have shown that alone will help you to live longer. But those can't work at their best unless your insulin is dialed in. And this means you're long acting if you're on MDI, if you're on a pump, your basal settings, right? Your insulin to carb ratios and dare I say, insulin to protein ratios, insulin to fat resistance ratios. These are things that aren't often talked about in doctor's offices, but it's one of the things that we dive into with our clients. Your correction factor, insulin sensitivity factor, these are things that must be considered and fine-tuned to each individual. We're all different, and what's crazy is that even though my needs are different than yours, my needs today are different than they were a year ago. My needs a year ago, very different than they were 5 years ago. Our own lifestyle decisions can change our insulin needs. And if you don't know how to fine tune and reset your blood sugars at the foundational level, then nothing else you do is going to be able to function at its best. You'll see small improvements. It will help to follow these five tips, but at a foundational level, you have to have your insulin dialed in if you are insulin dependent like me. So all of these tips, I would say that the biggest thing I can give you, let me just check on this too in my notes, right? Basics before breakthrough. That's what I wanted to sum it up with. We have these programs that we walk our clients through where we go into the finest of details. We get into a place where blood sugars are literally predictable, where I can go into the yesterday, a 5 hour workout, and end exactly where I want to. After 5 hours, 56.8 mile on the bike, 5.4 miles on the run, I stayed 100% time in range for the entire 5 hours of exercise. I started at 140 and I ended at 104, 104 milligrams per deciliter. That was intentional. That was planned. And to have that level of certainty, we go into very specific setups with these blood sugar formulas with my clients. But all of the advanced stuff, all of the specifics would do nothing if I hadn't been doing the basics first, right? Drinking my water, consistent exercise, getting sleep, eating my healthy foods, right? These are things that have to be considered. Just like with swimming, as I mentioned in the beginning, I've been researching my stroke rate, my depth positioning of my head, my body roll, my spin turns, all these different advanced topics with swimming, and yet I forgot to breathe properly. And so if I forget to breathe properly, I'll drown before it even matters how, you know, fine-tuned my stroke pattern is. So if we don't consider the basics first, it doesn't even open up the doors for us to start looking at the advanced stuff. So as my clients do, I want you to do as well. Start with the foundations. Start with the basics so that you can build on top of that. In fact, one of the places that you can start with basics but also have a smooth transition into more advanced topics is our Renegade Warriors newsletter. If you're not part of that yet, I know hundreds and hundreds of you guys are already in that. You get it every single month delivered to your doorstep. You tell me how much you love it. But for those of you who are new here and don't have that yet coming to your doorstep, it's a once a month newsletter that we deliver to you, basically a magazine, and it's specific for type 1 diabetes. And it goes into one topic deep, gets the advanced strategies on that. Previously, we did talk about insulin to protein ratios, gluconeogenesis, how to assess your insulin needs after a high fat or a high protein meal. But it also covers basics like hydration, like insulin to carb ratios, like pre-bolus timing, and all these things mixed together to allow us to make one step further every single month without getting overwhelmed. So if you're looking for a way to continually see improvements with time in range, with your A1C coming down, with more flexibility in lifestyle as it relates to type 1 diabetes, highly recommend you go check out the Renegade Warriors newsletter. Actually, I forgot I was wearing this shirt. So the shirt says Renegade Warrior, think differently, because we pride ourselves on thinking differently about diabetes, about these situations that will allow us to not only live with diabetes well controlled, but also to live our best life, right? And enjoy what we have to offer to the world. So if that's something that you think would be helpful to get that one level deeper every single month, just delivered to your doorstep, ready for you to dive into, go to renegadenewsletter.com. And I got a special gift for you there as well that I think you'll find helpful, including a little bit of what we covered today. So renegadenewsletter.com. If you found this one helpful, let me know. Love seeing you guys in the chat. So hope you enjoy this episode. Share it, like it, drop a comment. Let me know what you thought. And I'll see you guys next week. Have an amazing rest of your day and keep up the fight.